Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5. The game streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick with you today. Darren McFarlane on vacation, but we have received word that he will be available for Silly Underdog Picks coming up at noon, so look forward to that. But right now we say hello to the GM, Floyd Reese. 2 to 6 weekdays with Jared Stillman here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, but joins us every Thursday. Floyd, how are we?
Outstanding. How are you guys?
Oh, doing fantastic.
Good.
Always look forward to these conversations with you on a Thursday. So the Titans coming off that loss a week ago against the Indianapolis Colts. They've had the long weekend, the mini bye, as they like to call it, to try and recover. And we just went through the injury report. And a lot of big names listed on this report, Floyd, of guys that either have been limited in practice or we don't know. But I'll start with Adoree Jackson. He didn't practice yesterday. No word if he's going to go again today. They have added him to the active roster. In your mind, how long do they really have to use that roster spot to determine if he truly is going to be able to come back and help them this year?
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to think they'd know by now. You know, it's been over half a season. And you'd like to think they have some kind of an indication as to whether or not he's going to come back, you know, in a day, in a week, in a month, whatever the case may be. Because you're exactly right. I mean, at a point in time, it's futile. You know, you're saying, okay, fine, come back or not, doesn't make any difference. It would certainly be nice to get him back and get him on the field. Jeez, it seems like it's been forever. I don't know what this injury could have been. This would be interesting. I guess at some point in time we'll find out. But, you know, it's obvious not an ACL. I don't know if it was maybe an MCL or an LCL or, you know, I don't think it could be meniscus. You know, this is too long. Scope, it's too long. So I don't know where he is.
Do you think he had a setback in there, Floyd?
Could have been, sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, periodically you'll have a scope and maybe that scope will get infected and, you know, you go from there. But, I mean, as long as it's taken, it's either, like I said, you know, it's an MCL that's been torn, that's, you know, they had to repair and get that back and that's taken longer, or it's, you know, something that reoccurred. Because there was a point in time, I want to say, it seems like forever ago, that he actually practiced. You know, he came back and practiced a couple of days. And so then back then, you know, this is like 3-4 weeks ago. You're thinking, oh, okay, things must be coming along. And then he disappears again. So, you know, now you look back on it and you think, well, maybe he re-injured it some way.
Floyd, the day, I can imagine as a general manager, the day after the draft, you sit there and you look at your picks and you go, yeah, all right, I did good. I feel really, really good about what I've added to my roster. And then you kind of see how things work out. That's kind of the process. John Robinson right now had to feel good about his draft class this year, but for whatever reason, he hasn't been able to really see exactly what they are because we know everything going on with Isaiah Wilson. Darrington Evans has been hurt. You've had Fulton that's been hurt. Chris Jackson has been banged up some, but he's shown some flashes. Murchison shown some flashes. So how difficult is that for a general manager to know, like, I still feel like I did good and we have a good draft class, but I just haven't really been able to, count the fruits of my labor so far.
And you know, it's interesting because with John, if you kind of look back at his record, it seems like we've had this more than not. You know, you look at Simmons, we bring him in, he's hurt. So, you know, you go half a season and he comes back, and when he comes back, he's a house of fire, you know, so you feel good about that. But even with Davis, remember Davis, didn't he get hurt? Didn't he pull a hamstring?
Oh, yeah. Very late getting going.
Yeah, right off the bat. And so, you know, now he's into halfway through the season before he gets going. So
Rashawn Evans took a while to get going. He had a training camp
That's
issue.
Right.
Couldn't get on the field.
Yeah. So we've seen that a little bit. So, you know, I would imagine this year, I'm not sure how you grade any of these young guys in a year like this. You know, I think any of the guys that are playing are obviously good picks, guys you're excited about. But there's such a large percentage of the guys that aren't playing and aren't really doing much. You know, how much of that is the COVID-19? How much of it is no off season? I don't know how they can measure that. But at the end of the season, I'm sure they'll take time to figure it out.
As they get ready for the Ravens this week, I know that, you know, Mike Vrabel has been that last year's last year, and you kind of feel that way. But with the offense for Baltimore virtually the same, how much do you look at the film from the playoff game? Or are you looking more from games of this year to try and dissect what you're going to do against them?
Yeah, no, I think you're looking at films from this year. You don't throw away the film from last year. You'll look at it, and I think you look at two things. You look at, okay, this is what we did and did effectively. How will they respond this time around? You know, what will they do differently to try to counter that, anticipating you using it again? And the other thing you look at are your matchups. You know, how did Evans play against their center? How did, you know, Simmons play against one of the guards, you know, those kinds of things. And I think that kind of helps you determine where your strengths and weaknesses are going to be. But other than that, you know, each game is so different and so many different things happen and affect the outcome of the game that you kind of blow a lot of that stuff off.
Was Ravens week for you kind of up there with like Steelers week or some of the other rivalries that you guys had?
Yeah, for sure. Especially since we got here, you know, we'd kind of had back and forth with Baltimore, but I think when we got here, you know, I think a couple of things that were really, really big. I think first of all, we were both pretty good teams. And so, you know, the game was big. You know, the outcome of the game was going to be magnified later on in the year. And I think both teams were so physical. And when you have those real physical matches like that, you know, it's kind of a yearly test of manhood, if you will. And I think they, you know, there's that element that always played a part in it. You know, we can remember back to, you know, Eddie George and Ray Lewis and collisions and, you know, situations on the sideline and, you know, all kinds of different things that that I think helped spark that rivalry, you know, get it going. I'm not sure it's as passionate now as it was then, but they're a good team. We're a good team. You know, we went up there and beat them last year, knocked them out of the playoffs, and they can't be happy about that. Both teams are kind of in a similar situation in that this game is a big game. You know, this is a game that you got to get a W at all costs. And so I think this will be a battle.
Floyd Reese is with us talking Titans Ravens. And Floyd, you've been really hitting on this point for a few weeks. What has been happening a lot to the Titans defense is they've been getting just carved up by good pocket passers and teams that can spread it out three wide, four wide, or get a running back involved. And they're just finding some of the weak links on the Titans secondary, and they can't really supplement that with a pass rush very much. But if you look at the Ravens offense, that's not really how they go about it. They have a very different, unorthodox offense, and it's worked really well. But in a way, is that almost a better matchup for the Titans defense?
You know, I think it will be. As crazy as that sounds. Because ideally, and the thing that we did so well the last time we played them was we got ahead and we forced Lamar to be a pocket passer. And I think that's what you want to do. And if you can do that, then you've got a chance. That's not his forte. You know, he it's all the other things. And yet I think he's buying into some of this. People are saying, well, you know, the area he's got to improve. He's got to improve as a pocket passer. He's got to improve, you know, his passing outside the hash marks. He's got to, you know, improve his passing down the field. And I think all of those things have kind of creeped into his mind a little bit. And I take this really from the New England game last week. You know, there were times New England just rushed three guys and weren't really that concerned with getting them there as much as they were concerned with keeping him in the pocket. But they would rush three guys, and then the fourth guy was kind of a spy in case he did get out. And Lamar, you know, struggled with that a bit. And so, you know, I think you're looking at those kinds of things and you're thinking, okay, where traditionally, as we all know, you got to put pressure on the quarterback, got to knock him down, got to get him off his point, got to all that stuff. I'm not sure exactly how that's going to fit in this week. It's going to be really, really interesting.
We know Baltimore has an excellent defense, but they are missing some key guys. I'm looking at their numbers for the year against the rush on Football Outsiders. They're ranked third. They've done a really good job, but as we know, if anybody watched that Sunday night game, the Patriots really ran the ball effectively. What did they do? Is it just the injuries, and can the Titans take advantage of that?
Yeah, I think the injuries were big. You know, Campbell didn't play, and then I think Williams got hurt during the game. And those are their two Jeff Simmons guys, you know. And when they're in there, the run is 50% harder. I don't think – now, I've heard – I don't know how true it is. I've heard that Campbell may not play, and they were kind of waiting on Williams, so maybe we'll find out later about that. But it would certainly help without those guys in there. And we all know that we're going to try to run the ball, and that, you know, the better the day is for Derek, probably the better the day is going to be for the Titans. And so if we can do that, that would be gigantic. And you're right. New England did a good job of running the ball, and it did just what we wanted. You know, they weren't, Baltimore wasn't having a lot of success running the ball. Lamar was kind of bottled up, and now you're holding on to the ball. Well, that little bit of panic that sets in when you fall 14 points behind, all of a sudden is magnified because you're not getting the ball back. How are we going to catch up if we don't get the ball? And, you know, I think if there was a game plan or a blueprint I could draw up for us in this game, that would be it.
You can go far enough back to the era where the more you could give it to the main running back, the better, right? You didn't worry about, you know, 370 carries as opposed to 390 or 400, but teams definitely are more conscious of that now. It does look like there is certainly evidence that would tell you a wear and tear. You know, we always talk about the 400 carry year that Eddie George had. You can go back to the Earl Campbell era. There was probably more guys like that back then. It seems like the Titans are conscious about the right amount of workload for Derrick Henry, but they also know there's going to be some games where he is going to need to carry it 25 or 30 times. So where do you stand on all that, the workload issue for Henry?
You know, I, of course, when we had Eddie, that, you know, we were going to run Eddie. That was going to be it. I think they're being smart with Derrick, and I think they're being smart, and hopefully the latter part of this year will reap the benefits of all that, because that's, you know, starting now. But for these next seven games, I mean, it's going to be critical that he can run the ball. So, you know, anything you can do, and it's not like we're going from, you know, 100 miles an hour to 1 mile an hour. You know, those guys, the backups we've seen are not Derrick Henry. We're not pretending they are. But you're going from 100 to, you know, maybe 55. And maybe that's okay. You know, maybe if they can go in there and they can get 30 or 40 yards and spell Derrick, you know, maybe he wouldn't have gotten any more. And so, you know, you're kind of killing two birds with one stone. So, I mean, I like the idea. If it down the line gets him an extra year, then, you know, then we'll really reap the benefits.
Last one, Floyd. You are a former special teams coach. In general terms, like, we know that the Titans have had all kinds of issues on special teams, really in every facet. And the headline is always the field goal kicking and the punting when you have a disaster like you had on Thursday. But really, covering kicks and returning kicks, they really haven't had a good year at all. Is it fixable? How fixable is special teams compared to other facets of the game in the course of a season?
Yeah, you know, it's when it comes to kickers, and I got this largely from kickers, but when it comes to kickers, they're unique. You've heard me say that before. I mean, they're a different breed. They want to do the same thing every single time. If you watch like a field goal kicker, when he gets ready to kick, you know, he's going to find his spot. He's going to take his couple of steps back. He's going to, you know, move to the left or right exactly the same way every single time. And that's what they want with the snaps and with the holds. And when they don't get that, rightly or wrongly, I mean, it becomes a problem quickly. Punters, you know, you watch punters all the time, and not every punt snap is going to be as good as a field goal PAT snap. But, you know, no, very, very, and we've been fortunate here. I mean, very seldom do we get a ball rolling back. You know, very seldom do we get a ball snapped over the head. So they put it within an area that the punter can get it and get started in the direction he wants to go. The other areas, I think, are a concern for me because I know, and you guys know, I mean, we have kept players on this roster just for punt protection, just for kick returns, just for covering kicks, just for covering punts. I mean, we got a couple of guys there, you know, brought them in as special teamers, signed them as special teamers. And so when you see the displays that we've seen coming from the special teams, I mean, the changes I don't like. And I know the players don't like. I'm talking about the kickers, snappers, holders. They don't like it either. But the other aspect, I mean, we should be better. We haven't had a kick return or a punt return in so long. I mean,
it's hard to remember good
ones. I've forgotten what they look like.
Yeah.
I just feel like special teams across the league is just not what it used to be in general. Like, you've had, I know they moved the extra point back, but kicking, you know, punting coverage, returns, it's all just not what it once was.
Yeah. I mean, you've taken the kick return out of it completely. And kick returns were always one of my favorites. You know, I mean, there's nothing more exciting than a kick return for a touchdown. I mean, I always thought that was just such a big play. But we've almost eliminated that. You know, it's almost impossible to even get a return, let alone a good return. And the punters are getting so darn good.
Boy, they
that,
are.
You know, you end up, it's inside the 10 or you're fair catching it or whatever the case may be, almost on a weekly basis.
He is the GM, Floyd Reese, 2-6 weekdays here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Floyd, appreciate it as always. We'll do it again next week.
Have a good day, guys.
You too. Floyd Reese, again, check him out, 2 o'clock today, and also on our pregame show on Sunday before the Titans and the Ravens. A lot to discuss there, Willie, and we'll do that. And if you want to weigh in, 615-737-1025, you can call or text driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Do that. And we will discuss the Titans more next here on Darren Donick and Chase, presented by Blue Note Juke Joint. Blue Note Juke Joint here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren Donick and Chase brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint. Smoother than smooth. Welcome back in here on a Thursday. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Elijah Campbell back at the Wholesale Inc. Studios, powered by Rumble on .com. Appreciate the GM Floyd Reese for joining us. Again, if you want to weigh in on anything Tennessee Titans related, 615-737-1025 on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll have a couple of texts to get to in just a second. But the matchup that the Titans have this week, Willie, against the Baltimore Ravens, I know we saw last year, and as Floyd addressed it, you're kind of looking at film this year. You don't want to throw away last year's film, but things have changed, and you got to focus on the now. But it does seem like the matchups favor the Titans, even defensively, that they might be able to get some of that confidence back and make some plays.
Well, it's all theory, because we know how dangerous the Ravens are. But I have been very interested to hear the opinions of Bernard Pollard yesterday and Floyd today in particular along the lines of, you know, trying to contain that Ravens offense, which was so explosive last year, and it has not been as good this year, but also taking the weakness of the Titans' defense, which is you can't rush the passer, and you have not enough numbers of people that can cover. So you put the two together, and you have almost death by paper cut, right? They're just giving up a lot of moving the chains drives, double-digit drives. They just grind it out. And on top of that, they really haven't stopped the run very well on top of it. So you put all that together, that's been a problem. But Baltimore does it differently. And you heard Floyd say it, that you saw New England really not even try to sack Lamar Jackson. It was more or less, we're going to come at you with three, and we're just going to keep him in the pocket, make him make those decisions with a lot of people dropped back in coverage. They don't have explosive weapons all across the board, not a lot of depth. And so maybe you have better chances of getting off the field against this Ravens team. Let's look at Lamar Jackson's numbers this year. Football Outsiders, remember he was the MVP of the league last year. And right. let's even add the element of him running, which is ESPN's QBR, right? That's what is the best stat to put everything QBR together, right? Not just as a passer, but when you have the ability to change the game running the way he does. He is at 65.3, and so that ranks 18th in the league. So he has really taken a step back statistically this year. It has been pretty noticeable. In fact, I'd like to look at how that compares to other league MVPs the following year. You can certainly imagine there's some drop-off for a lot of guys.
Sure.
That's a big drop-off.
Well, do you think that that's because the league's figured him out, or it's simply that's just his regression? I mean, that was going to be what it was all along. I mean, I would think that you have to factor those two in together, that the league has film on him, and so therefore they're going to know how to defend him a little bit better. So what can he do to change some of that?
I think that's one theory for sure, and I'm sure that's part of the puzzle, right? That teams had all summer, they've been watching who does well against it, what can we do. I do think they've figured some of it out, and maybe they haven't come up with new wrinkles. And as you heard Gary Stein say earlier this week, there have been some key injuries. The tight end play has not overall been as good. They were killing people last year. Tim Hasselbeck pointed this out for us on the show. This is why I like putting this together throughout the week, because our people that give insight, I think, really spell these things out for us. Tim's point was what they were doing last year, you had to defend the run, and they put a heavy group out there. They had three tight ends. So, okay, man, we can't get the ball crammed down our throats, so we got to put big guys on the field to negate that. Well, what happens? Then the tight ends run wild and take advantage of those matchups, and they don't have the players to run with them. But the tight ends haven't been as good. They've been hurt. There's not as much effectiveness, and maybe there's a little better feel for how to defend it. And they also really haven't run it quite as well, right? Mark Ingram is not the same player that he's been. He's been injured.
I think he's towards the end.
Well, I'm wondering if there'll be any resurgence. Of course, you and I have him on our fantasy team, so we'd like to see a resurgence on some level, but maybe not on Sunday. But the other guys have not really picked up the slack. They're not as scary. And I think, as we were saying before, you want to be able to, if there's a way that you can entice Lamar Jackson into having to make reads and be a pocket passer, you'd rather take your chances with that than, you know, him running and making things happen on his own.
Earlier today, Trent Dilfer, who's the head coach at Lipscomb Academy and also former NFL quarterback, Super Bowl winning quarterback with Baltimore, he was on with Robbie and Rex Road, and they asked him the question, do you think that the league has figured out Lamar Jackson?
I don't know if it's figuring him out. I think what they're trying to do is take away what he does best. And the Ravens offense, when you study it, it's obviously misdirection, power run game with him as a threat as a runner. That creates a lot of conflict for your inside players. You know, you got to be gap secure on defense, and he makes you very un-gap secure. So they're adding an extra player in the middle of the football field to help take that away. It also helps with the awesome crossing route packages they have. So the Ravens, when they're dynamic in the passing game, use a lot of crossing routes. They really eat up the middle of the football field. So defenses are adding an extra player to help in the run game, help in the cross route passing game, and saying, okay, if you're going to beat us, you're going to have to throw the ball outside the numbers. That's not what Lamar does best. Now, I think the Ravens don't need to necessarily do that just because teams are adding an extra player in there. I think they need to do what they do and do it better.
Trent Dilfer earlier today.
It's good stuff.
Robbie and Rexford. Yeah, and that's
I think he makes a good point. The tight ends crossing in the middle of the field, just think back to some highlights you saw last year. You will see a lot of wide-open tight ends on crossing routes going for big, big chunks. And and I think that's a good way of putting it for Trent, not getting too technical, but trying to take away what you do best and trying to see if you can beat us out of your comfort zone, which means not as much crossing routes, not as much throwing over the middle. And this coincides with what Tim told us, but forcing him to make decisions and throw the ball to the outside.
Yeah, and I my whole thing with him has always been that I think he's a tremendous athlete. He's a Heisman Trophy winner. He's an NFL MVP. He has earned all of those accolades, but he just, you know, and he's got a decent arm, but he's not going to beat you that way. Like, he's going to beat you with all of the tools that he has. So how can he adapt and continue to stay in this league year in and year out as the rest of the league figures him out? Because that's what's going to happen. And the example that gets used a lot is how Russell Wilson has evolved since he first got into the league and became the starter to now. He changes up his game. He keeps adding new things to the arsenal to keep from being figured out. And he's always going to have the disadvantage of being a small guy. And so Russell Wilson has to overcome that. But what can Lamar Jackson do to overcome some of the things that the league is going to be able to key in on, like Trent was talking about?
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I think it's got to be a little bit puzzling as to why this has happened so quick. You heard Trent say the battle is to be able to say, hey, let's not reinvent the wheel. Let's still play to our strengths. Let's just do it better. Let's execute better. But when you have personnel issues where you really don't have the same guys out there around him, and we use Ingram as an example, he doesn't appear to be the same guy. You know, they had two or three tight ends last year. I'm trying to do a little comparison last year to this year. They don't really have the one main guy, but it's really a different set. It's not the same. And they've never really had the great wide receivers that scare you. Like, Willie Snead is a good, solid wide receiver, but, you know, he's not a game breaker by any stretch. So the old bend but don't break might work better against the Ravens, but once again, you know, when you struggle and you don't have a lot of confidence, you need some good things to happen to try to settle into the game. So I think early in the game, can the Titans build a little confidence and get a few stops to where this kind of plays out some?
Yeah, and I think offensively for the Titans, you know, I know a lot's been made, and we've discussed it, of, okay, that you can run against them. You got to rely on Derrick Henry. But I'll ask you this. Do you think that at some point, because last year, and you referenced this yesterday, that it was 88 yards for Ryan Tannehill in the win in the playoffs? That's all you needed. And in fact, we made such a big deal about those the playoff games that they won. He was under 100 yards passing because they didn't need him. At what point, though, is he going to have to win them a game? That whether Henry's taken out of it or Henry's a complimentary piece, but you're going to have to rely on Tannehill more. Do you think that it's this weekend that he's going to have to maybe step it up to another level to try and beat this team?
I think he's proven that he can win the game if he needs to. Last year was interesting. I mean, those were some elite defenses, the Ravens and the Patriots, which made it even more amazing what Derrick Henry was doing to those teams. But I don't think you sit there and say, well, we're afraid to throw it because he only threw for 88 yards in the playoff game. I think it was just more how the game unfolded. There were some short fields. And why throw it when you're ahead and Derrick Henry's running as well as he did? And I think most of the 88 yards, if I recall, was probably in the first half And in the second half, I wonder how many passes they even threw. One of them was thrown by Derrick Henry for a touchdown, right?
Yeah.
In the second half. But I think they're very confident that they can throw it. I am curious to see if they could ever get a game, because I think regardless of how many passing yards they throw for, they're going to need to run it effectively. And that doesn't mean you have to have 150 or 180 yards by any stretch. But if you run it well and set up that play action and set up what you do well, then I think you can be effective even though it's the Ravens. But I would love to see a game where A.J. Brown and Corey Davis are involved. And you can really get the diversity in there. Because we've said it before. What are the Titans? As they appear to be what they are, right? The longer the season goes and the same themes come up every week, you start to think, okay, this is what they are. So how are they going to need to win, especially against good teams? Really good offense. The offense is going to have to carry them to a point. You got to get by on defense, and you got to fix the special teams. So to beat the Ravens, and then, you know, I think the same goes for the Colts next week in Indy, they need great efforts from their offense, which means everybody's got to contribute. They have enough, right? If everything's clicking, they've got enough weapons to hurt good defenses. They just need everybody to be focused, and they've got to find the right matchups and put the ball where they need to put it.
Well, and the thing, too, is, you know, last week with Corey was targeted 6 times, caught 5 of them, 67 yards. I think they wanted to include A.J. They targeted him 4 times, but he had some drops. He had a case of the dropsies. He only had the one catch for 21 yards, but they hit him down the sideline. If he catches that, I think it's 6 or at least setting up 6. But we talked about this, Darren said it, if you're going to be considered an elite wide receiver, a top guy, you got to make those catches. And there have been a couple of times lately where he's dropped some balls that he shouldn't have. And so how does he get over that? What is the extra work that he's putting in? Is he on the jugs machine? Is he staying after practice? Is he, as Trent Dilfer likes to say, is he putting in the quiet time? Is he doing that extra thing?
He strikes me as a guy that does do all that stuff. I don't think that's a worry.
Yeah.
I don't look at him and say I don't know about his work ethic. I think he works extremely hard. I think it's just, you know, he had a couple bad games. As long as I've watched him, I've never had a lack of confidence that he was going to catch the ball. But there's no question, especially the one down the sideline last week, that could have maybe been a game changer. If they jump up 14-0, you never know. And there have been a couple other catches where I don't know if I would say it was a true drop, but it was a catchable ball, right? It wasn't the easiest catch.
Sure.
You know, maybe the pass a little bit behind. There was one I can remember where he's running the pattern. The pass is behind him. He's got to reach back and try to snare it, and he can't quite come up with it. But I think he would probably be the first to tell you, I could have caught that, and I need to catch that. So I don't see a guy that has bad hands, right?
No.
I think everybody goes through little slumps. I think this is just one of those times. I have the utmost confidence in him. I think it's just the flow and trying to utilize both of those guys together as best as they can. Right, because I think when they're both at their best, they both look pretty darn good.
Yeah, I agree. And my whole thing with AJ is just it's all about his progression. And as he gets better, defenses are going to notice him more. They're going to put more on him. He's going to go up against the top corners in the league, and to be considered that true number one elite guy, like I believe that he truly can be. That's where you have to get better against those guys. You have to be able to make those catches where the ball's thrown a little bit behind, or you have a guy draped all over you. That's just a part of it. That's a respect thing too. It means the league respects you. They're throwing that at you because they think that you can do it. So now you got to prove that you can. And to your point, if they get a game, and I can't really say that they have truly had a game where you had to fear A.J. Brown and Corey Davis at the same time. It's been one or the other, which is great that you have options, and you have Henry, and you have, you know, Jonnu Smith and others. But there hasn't been that game yet where it's like 11, 84, 22, who's getting it this time?
Yeah.
That needs to be this week.
And I think it doesn't have to be each guy catches 8, because once you get up into that range, you start asking, well, what's the score? You know, because then you're saying, are they having to throw it 40 to 45 times? And that's usually not a good recipe for them, right? The recipe usually is you want a steady dose of Derrick Henry, and you're not wanting to have to throw it that many times. So I think, as we were talking about with Aaron Schatz earlier this week, it's not necessarily the number of catches, but it's the efficiency, right? And so this offense is designed to run it and run it a lot. So that's going to affect the stats that A.J. Brown and Corey Davis have, but if one catches seven, you'd like the other guy to catch at least three or four, right, where they're both stretching the defense laterally. The coverage is having that. We can't roll our coverage one way, because then the other guy is going to get us. You know what I mean? So yeah, having them both have a game where they catch 100 yards worth of passes, that I don't want that to be in a shootout where they're behind and having to play catch-up or something like that. That's really not the identity of the Titans. But I think there's a way for them to both be effective in the same game. And, you know, it's efficiency more than quantity.
We got a text on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Unnamed. Do you feel like Adam Humphries has been a bust for what his contract is? And I'll get your answer. I just think he's you know, been unlucky and had a concussion this year, and he had an injury last year. I mean, it happens. It's especially when you're a guy that plays over the middle like that, you're going to get hit. Even though they have changed the rules, Bernard Pollard was talking about that a lot yesterday, to try and protect the receiver. I mean, it's still a tough position to play, and it was an awful hit a few weeks ago, and he's still in concussion protocol. But when he's on the field, he's effective. He's a chain mover.
Yeah, I think he's been fine when he's been out there. I think if you watched him in Tampa, he took a beating. He's not a big guy. He is, his willingness to take a beating, to make the catch for that, you know, that slot that he plays, I think you knew that it was not going to be easy to keep him on the field for 16 games. So a bust for the contract, they're not paying him huge money, right? It was a nice pickup. You know, it was funny that the Patriots sort of said, we would have liked to have had him. So I think he's been okay, for sure. You'd like to see him out there more. Hopefully he'll get back and he'll be effective for them down the stretch. But yeah, I think if you look at his numbers, he's been maybe not the best they hoped for, but I think he plays his role and plays it well. He's opening things up for everybody else. He's a threat when he's on the field, and I think they miss him when he's not in there.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it'll be he'll be another big piece to get back whenever he is available to go. Titans fans, Corner Pub is the place to check out the game, with locations in Bellevue, Brentwood, or downtown, and great beer specials, including $1 off Yazoo and Happ and Harry's draft beers, plus Happ and Harry's bucket specials. No miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from the Corner Pub in Bellevue, my neck of the woods, this Sunday. Join ESPN 102.5 The Game from 9:30 to 11:30 prior to the Titans taking on the Baltimore Ravens. The NFL pregame show features Jared Stillman, the GM Floyd Reese, and forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders, and is brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by Rumble On, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota dealers. Silly Underdog Picks featuring Chris Sanders coming up at the top of the hour, plus Jerry Stackhouse at 1 o'clock today to talk Vanderbilt hoops with him. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coming up this Saturday, catch the College Football Game of the Week on ESPN 102.5 The Game, presented by Gary Force Acura. This Saturday's game is a Big 12 matchup as Oklahoma State faces its in-state rival, Oklahoma. Kickoff is at 6:30 on ESPN 102.5 The Game, so be sure to check that out. Welcome back in to Darren Donick and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint, smoother than smooth. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Elijah Campbell hanging out with you on a Thursday again. Silly Underdog Picks coming up at the top of the hour. But tonight, Willie, you know, I don't know if about you, but the NFC West has become probably my favorite division outside of the AFC South in football, because it's been so entertaining. It got a classic tonight between Arizona and Seattle, 2-6-3 teams. This is one that Kyler Murray got the best of Russell Wilson the last time around, but it's in Seattle. And I'm leaning Seattle right now.
Well,
meaning?
if you look at these two games, they're probably two of the more entertaining teams to watch because of the way they sling it around, and they've got very exciting quarterbacks, very exciting playmakers. And as you said, the Sunday night game that these two teams played was a classic. And so this is a great game as far as Thursday night matchups go. And when we were doing our power rankings earlier this week, Chase, I had a hard time separating the Cardinals, the Seahawks, and then you throw a third team in there in the Rams. And I'm looking, at the rankings that I had. I still am giving the nod to the Seahawks. That's almost a little bit of benefit of the doubt, but the Rams and Arizona are so tight, and the Rams actually play the Cardinals twice before the season's over. So this is the first of some very, very important Cardinals division games. And the Cardinals, it's been a few years since they've been really in a good playoff chase. So I want to see how they handle themselves when the spotlight is on them. But, you know, they're coming off that miraculous finish last week. As you said, they beat the Seahawks the first time. So they're going to come in very confident.
Seattle -2.5 tonight. The over-under in this one for a Thursday night game, this is crazy, 56.5. The over-under. But those two offenses, I mean, you kind of expect that. I mean, that's been Seattle's bugaboo for a team that was so known for the Legion of Boom. Those days are long gone, but still have a prolific offense. And then, like we said with Arizona, we know what the tandem of DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray has been this first year together. It's been pretty deadly. So I think a lot of points could be put up there tonight. I look at these teams being, as you said, the most fun to watch, but they're similar. Kyler Murray is kind of like the younger version of Russell Wilson. They're very similar in how they play. They have their differences, but I feel like that Russell has kind of paved the way for somebody like Kyler Murray to be successful in this league. And then Cliff Kingsbury's offense seems to be working with the pieces that he has.
I'm looking at the Football Outsiders rankings, which, you know, I love to watch closely. And Wilson and Murray both rank very well in those categories, but not at the top of the top. For example, Ryan Tannehill is ahead of both of those guys, even though, you know, from a fantasy perspective, you probably, you know, don't mind having Wilson or Murray out there because, you know, they're gonna rack up a lot of yards. But remember, as we mentioned too, when you add in the running stat and you look at total QBR, that's where Wilson and Murray move up a notch. Certainly Murray, he's 10th. Wilson is 8th. And Tannehill actually slides down to 11th. And, you know, Tannehill's no slouch running the ball. He can run it when he needs to. But it just shows you that Wilson can still do it when he wants. And Murray, we know, is a highlight reel when he runs the ball. So I'm looking forward to this one tonight. I'm always lukewarm on Thursday night football, but we know, yeah, in the atmosphere we're in, we don't have the weekly slate of hockey games and basketball games that we normally have at this time of the year. And hopefully that's coming not too long from now, fingers crossed. But I think there'll be a lot of eyes on this game tonight.
Yeah, I do too. And I actually think the Thursday night product, while I still have been a proponent of I'd rather have two Monday night games than the Thursday night game, the Thursday night product's been better than it has been in years past.
They seem to have had some luck with good matchups this year.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they have. So, last week's game, for all intents and purposes, until the second half, third quarter, was a good game. And then it got away from the Titans, but they've had good matchups, and I think that this one will be tonight as well. Speaking of the Titans, a little piece of news just coming out. They have made it official and signed Trevor Daniel from the practice squad to the active roster, and then they added Ryan Allen, punter Ryan Allen, to the practice squad. So basically just swapping those two guys with their roster spot. So I still can't figure that one out. I know Mike Vrabel semi-addressed it yesterday. There's a lot with the hang time and something they saw with Trevor Daniel that they liked.
Well,
but
until Daniel has a good game, right, sure, you're gonna hear this. You're going to have a lot of eyebrows raised and like, are you sure you know what you're doing here? But they've been pretty decisive with it, to their credit. And as we say that, it with each passing day, still nothing on the kicking front. So is that coming, or are we more inclined to say it's Gostkowski?
Well, I don't know. I know we'll hear from Mike Vrabel in the next hour, but I don't know. I don't know if he's going to make a change or if he's just going to answer it like he has been. And
right. We go back to my multiple choice question on Monday, right? A, it's, I don't know if I'm changing the options, but the three options are the same. It may not be in the same order as I presented it to you and Darren on Monday, but A, it's still Gostkowski. B, it is clearly not his job and they're just waiting. They're going to switch to somebody. Or C, there is an actual competition going on during the week, and they have not made up their mind. It is going to be based on who wins the job during the practices. Because any of the three are still possible right
they
now.
They are.
We don't know the answer.
But I just, I don't know. I feel like that Vrabel is loyal to a fault. And Robinson, too. I mean, ultimately, Robinson, you know, has a say in this. And I think they're just sticking with their guy because of what he's done in the past. And he's Steven Gostkowski. Because as we discussed, if his name is Chase McCabe, dude was cut weeks ago. There's no doubt. Like, they've moved on. If it was Greg Joseph, if they had started the year with Greg Joseph and Greg Joseph kicked that way against Denver, he's gone. The fact that it was Steven Gostkowski, they stuck with him.
Right.
And I understood that for a while. I was like, after the first week, I'm like, oh, okay, but I get it. But now it's just the inconsistencies have continued with him, and yet he's still on the roster.
I'm with you, but they, you know, I don't think it is a hard and fast loyal to a fault with everybody. It might be with Gostkowski, which I think is what you're arguing, because last year it was anything but that, because I think part of the reason they're trying to do this without making a change is they want the consistency, because the kicker roulette that they had last year was just as ineffective. Right, if not more ineffective. At least Gostkowski, if he does nothing else this year, can say, I won him a couple games with big kicks early in the year.
And he did.
How important are those two wins right now?
But I'll put it to you like this. You can hang on to him because you don't want to go through the kicking carousel like you did last year. It's the same logic of you don't want to fire and buy out Jeremy Pruitt because of the pattern that you've been on with other coaches. I get all that, and all of that makes a ton of sense. But is it going to hurt you even more hanging on to that guy if they're truly not the right guy? At some point, you're going to have to make a tough decision, even though you don't want to make it better for your team. That's just how I feel about it. And if he loses, you know, because I guess if we're being honest, he hasn't necessarily, I mean, he's won games, but he, you know, last week the whole team lost it. It was all three phases.
Right. I think you can argue that kick, the kick that he missed didn't cost them the game last week, but it would have kept them alive. It was an important kick that he missed. I think if they make that, then you're grabbing back on, like, picture somebody hanging from a cliff, you know, by their fingers, and you're like trying to pull yourself back up. And, you know, when he missed that kick, it was like your fingers slip and you fall and that's it.
Right.
You know, that end of the game right there.
Right. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see if he is the kicker and moving forward on Sunday or what have you. Who knows? As the kicker turns here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. But when we come back, it's time for Silly Underdog Picks. We love it. It happens every Thursday at noon. We'll get the panel ready, and we'll review. And, yes, Willie, I know there has been a change in the standings, so we will discuss that when we come back. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.